National Affairs Committee to order. Today is April 28, 2022. Let the record reflect. The time is 3:30 p.m. Today we have Vice Chair Myers, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Wilson, myself, Chair Hughes. Please silence your cell phones. And thank you very much to Juliana Singh, our recording secretary, and Talia Eames, our moderator from the LAO, and Daniel Phelps, our committee aide. The first item on today's agenda is House Bill 298, Alaska Food Strategy Task Force, sponsored by Representative Snyder. Welcome, Representative Snyder. Are there any questions before we get started from committee members? Okay, at this time, I'll invite Representative Snyder and her staff, Ari Wiggin, to the table for opening remarks and their sectional analysis. So please place yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Chair Hughes. This is Rep. Snyder. I represent the best parts of East Anchorage. I look around and make sure there's no other East Anchorage representatives too close by when I say that. Thank you so much for having me today. We are so grateful for the opportunity to speak with you about HB 298, the Food Strategy Task Force. I'm really excited about all the positive energy I hope we're all feeling around food security and food systems work here in the building and throughout the state, with a big focus on improving access to healthy foods and to growing our local food economy. I think we're all pretty well aware, and I hope excited about the Governor's Food Security and Independence Task Force, which runs through November 30th, 2022, and I'll speak a little bit today about the relationship between this proposed task force and that one, as well as the Food Caucus that we now have here in the legislature, which I know you know about that, to the broad suite of stakeholders across food production, harvest, distribution, and consumption, which I think you can see fairly well, very well represented in our 22 letters of support. And if you haven't had a chance to take a peek at that, you'll see letters of support representing interest in food policy, gardening, agricultural producers, extension, local food hubs, rural communities, farmers market association, food banks, and local business development, as well as the Farm Bureau, rural development organizations, and health associations, as well as the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association. So today I'll provide a brief overview and rationale and composition of the task force that we have before us, identify a couple key steps in its development, and highlight how it fits into other efforts, those that I mentioned just a moment ago. I won't belabor the point. I think we've heard it quite a bit, and the governor did a very good job highlighting some of the key motivating factors in his State of the State address several weeks ago. I think we hear a lot about the 95% of food that we import here in the state, and that not only causes in terms of commercial food that is important, that's a very important distinction, but what that represents, one, is that we rely on to get much of our commercially available food from it coming up from the lower 48, and I think we can imagine fairly easily if that were to be disrupted through political events or environmental events, whatever it might be, we could be in a tight spot pretty quick. You hear estimates between 3 and 10 days of food available on store shelves. What that also represents is about $2 billion worth of Alaskans' hard-earned money going in a reverse pipeline out of the state that we could redirect here within the state, supporting the growth of our own local economies. And that is certainly one of the biggest motivating factors in this bill. So we also hear, but I would argue not enough, that we have incredible potential here in Alaska to grow and harvest more of our own food, to develop and diversify our own food economies, and to become a formidable exporter of fresh and value-added food products, which I know at least one person in this room is focused on. We are a land rich with water, or we're a state rich with land, water, and entrepreneurial drive, and we have the resources here if we are able to focus our efforts and our strategy to grow it. So I'll get to the bill now, I promise. The bill was created with iterative input from a host of stakeholders. I mentioned a long list of them a moment ago. This includes the Alaska Food Policy Council, the Food Bank of Alaska, and the Alaska Farm Bureau. You'll hear from some of those folks today in invited testimony. I had the opportunity, was very grateful to get feedback from the chairs of the Food Caucus last December, and then after announcement of the Governor's Task Force, we collaborated to ensure that 298 was well designed to pick up where the task force leaves off in November and further expand upon its work. So the task force, it's comprised of, it has an executive board, that's its the base of the body. It's comprised of members of the Alaska Food Policy Council board, as well as four members of the state legislature, two from each body, with equal minority and majority representation. And then we also have included in this task force commissioners from a variety of relevant state departments, which you'll see within the body of the bill, and you'll hear from Ms. Wiggin in just a moment, as well as a varying selection of community members and fields related to the task force's focus areas. So over about 2 years, the way it's designed is that the task force will present state policy, legislation, and implementation strategy recommendations into what is now seven integrated focus areas. It was originally six, but when we heard this in previous committees in the other body, there was a desire to add increased emphasis on transportation and infrastructure, which is certainly something we had intended from the get-go, and we welcome that as a friendly amendment to be more explicit in that. The other six original areas that remain include sustainably growing the agriculture industry, sustainably growing markets for locally grown, locally harvested, and locally processed foods, enhancing the climate for food and beverage businesses, minimizing food waste and diverting it from the waste stream, improving connectivity, efficiencies, and outcomes in state-run programs affecting food availability and access, and then lastly, ensuring food security in both rural and urban communities, and based on geography and preferences, some of those needs can vary quite widely. So in conclusion, we designed this task force to help be part of the solution for Alaska's food system and security challenges through comprehensive engagement with policymakers and community members. And again, the idea is that this task force will provide policy, legislation, and implementation strategy recommendations crafted by those who are on the ground and on the water for strengthening our food systems and improving food security for the long-term benefit of Alaska. And I look forward to answering any questions, and if it's the will of the chair, I can turn to Ms. Wiggin for our
If we could just go through the sectional analysis to take care of that, and then we'll open to questions. So please introduce yourself.
Absolutely. My name is Aria Wiggin, staff to Representative Snyder, and I will briefly describe the sectional. Section 1 of this bill adds legislative intent language to establish the Food Strategy Task Force. Section 2 describes the composition and function of the task force. Sections A through D outline the composition. As mentioned, it will include a 9-member executive board made up of 5 members of the Alaska Food Policy Council and 4 members of the legislature, equal distribution from both bodies and both caucuses. The 26 members to serve on the advisory committees will be comprised of commissioners and their designees, including the DNR, DOT, the committee that will commission the department that will become the Department of Health, the Commissioner of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and Education and Early Development, or their designees. Sections E through I provide general guidance for board governance, including subjecting the task force to the Open Meetings Act, instructions about where and when the meetings will be held, and detailing that there will be no compensation. Sections J through M directs and provide guidance for the Food Strategy Task Force to create the advisory committees to present state policy, legislation, implementation strategies in 7 areas, as mentioned by Representative Snyder. Section O requires the task force to present recommendations on half of those focus areas by August 1st, 2023, and the other half by August 1st, 2024 in a report format, and instructs the task force to submit the report to the appropriate officials and notify the legislature. Section 3 addresses the Department of Health and Social Services split and subsequent change in titles. Section 4 instructs the task force to begin work by December 1st, 2022. Section 5 repeals Sections 1 and 2 of this act on June 30th, 2025. Section 6 adds an effective date of July 1st, 2022 for Section 3 alone, and Section 7 adds an immediate effective date except as provided in Section 6. Thank you.
Okay, members, questions? Senator Myers, you have a question?
I do. I do, Madam Chair. Thank you. So page 4 of the bill, the top part of the page, you're listing out your, excuse me, your focus areas there. On looks like line 7 there, it says enhancing the climate for food and beverage businesses. I'm all about enhancing the climate for business, but are we trying to address the restaurant business, or what's the goal here?
Thank you, Senator Myers, through the chair. And I was reflecting on our conversation on this the other day, and I think I directed us in a direction pointing us actually upwards to the sustainably growing markets for locally grown, locally harvested, and locally processed foods, which is also a priority. I think what the focus is for this particular bullet, enhancing the climate for food and beverage business, is not so much looking at areas where we're already seeing great growth and success. One could point to breweries, distilleries. We're seeing an explosion in farmers markets, though I think we could do even better on that front. In my mind, when we crafted this, restaurants, for example, was not number one, but any restaurateurs are listening, it's not that we don't want to include you, but I think this would include possible, and again, this would be up to the task force, but what we had in mind in recommending this particular focus area were things like online sales hubs where food producers or processors can get their products online, for example, to address issues around regulations and policies that may be hindering certain new areas of food-related business. We might have issues around, I know we have some bills addressing food safety, for example, and some of the regulations around that. possibly things around startup incentives for certain lines of business that you might see elsewhere in other circumpolar countries, which I'd be happy to speak a little bit more to, but that we haven't seen yet develop here in Alaska. And that was what was driving this bullet point. But I absolutely understand how it would be interpreted differently and would welcome conversation around tightening up language.
Thank you.
Senator Myers?
Just a follow-up comment. I appreciate the illumination there. I think we've seen our restaurant businesses and other related industries growing quite a bit, as you said lately, and I'm happy to see that. But as you point more towards food processing and the like, I think that's something that we have been lagging in. I can remember a few years ago I was working a job where I was hauling fish out of state during the summertime, and we could make quite a bit of money if we handled the well, of course, people want fresh fish, but we can make quite a bit of money if we process it in-state rather than shipping it out raw, too. So definitely appreciate the point there.
Are there other questions? Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question starts, I think it's Section 2, on Page 2 about the memberships. It goes on to Page 3. I guess we saw on page 3, line 3, about the youth member. What does a youth member entail? Is that someone that's elementary school or someone that's youthful at heart?
Well, we were thinking under 18 was our, we'll go with the typical, through the chair, our typical definition of youth. But this came up by another member, and I think that's a fair inquiry and could benefit from additional specificity. I think it came at the recommendation of some stakeholders that we spoke with when we were working on the development of this bill. And I think just whether it was a youth member in 4-H or a youth member involved in gardening or a youth member who's looking to start their own business, having some sort of documented engagement or interest in some aspect of the Alaska food system would be a welcome clarification.
Yeah, go ahead, Senator Wilson.
I guess I'm trying to get a better understanding of the largeness of the membership. You have technically 3 people from the University of Alaska, and I understand there are different campuses and they all have separate, but would one faculty member of the university system work? I don't know. And then you have some sort of food member of food distribution and transportation industry. But then you also have the Commissioner of Transportation. Are both of those needed? I'm just trying to understand sort of the vastness of how big of a functioning item of situation you would like. I mean, you're in a 40-body member now, and I can only imagine what that might look like for this new task force.
And before you answer that, because my question is similar, I'll just tag on so you can make it general so we're not being repetitive. For one thing, I came up with 9 on the executive, 6 commissioners, and then 20 others. So it was a little confusion, I think, when in the sectional. So it's a grand total of 36, which is quite large. So I'd like to understand how it would function if your expectation is just those 9 members would meet regularly and there were work groups made up of the others. And who is going to herd the cats? How is this going to be staffed? Because it's a legislative task force, so are the staff of the legislators appointed to this going to do all the prep work and getting the materials out and everything? It's big. I've been on a legislative task force that I chaired, and it was quite a bit of work, and I think we maybe had 9 members. And so just please cast a vision for us to answer Senator Wilson's question and mine about logistically how this would work and how are you going to manage all these people and who's going to staff it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Hughes and Senator Wilson. I think that is the most one of the most common questions we've fielded on this, and rightfully so. It is a little bit of a beast, as is the food system. So we're setting it up to have the areas of expertise that we would need to cover everything from food production and harvest to processing to distribution to access to marketing to food safety to cultural appropriateness to disposal, all those good things, that the idea being that we're creating an integrative food strategy for the state. That said, it is a large group of people to navigate. I'm going to try and go in order so I don't lose track. Specific to your question, Senator Wilson, about the multiple faculty members through the university system, yes, we do have multiple seats for the different institutions. That comes from a recognition that we have some broad expertise across these different campuses. For example, if you look at the University of Alaska all by itself, there's prior to coming to the legislature, this was the area that I worked in, and one of the things I did was conduct an inventory of faculty members at UAA who were involved in some aspect of food work in Alaska. And we have over 30 individuals spanning departments of biology, sociology, public health, engineering, and all of those could have some potential useful contributions to the conversation. I think it's also really great to have this broad geographical reference. So that was the motivation. And they are also very used to working on these types of groups and helping coordinate and helping collaborate and generating documentation and reports. I think those could be some very valuable skill sets to this large group. That said, there's no way around it. This is a big crew. And I would like to highlight, and we do have in our invited testimony today, Heather McCarty. She is or was the vice chair of the Mariculture Task Force. And we took a lot of inspiration from the Mariculture Task Force for a couple of reasons. One, it's very recent. Two, it is focused on another or a component of the larger food system, and it was exceptionally successful. We've seen at least 2 pieces of legislation that was a direct result of their work in the past year and a half. They helped reduce lease application backlogs. They improved the application process. They developed a training center. Tangible products abound. So we were keen to see how they put themselves together and how that worked. And we've been a bit more explicit in HB 298, but we modeled it very similarly to the Mariculture Task Force. So the Mariculture Task Force, Ari, please correct me if I'm misspeaking, I believe there are 11 members on what they called the task force proper, where we have 9. And then they had additional individuals working in advisory groups, similar number as to what we're dealing with here. I believe their total number may have been 31 or 33, working on multiple advisory groups. We end up with 36 in total. So we were just a bit more
prescriptive in the areas of expertise that we wanted and what those advisory groups should look should be looking at. Our hope is to hear from Heather McCarty today, and she can talk with you and provide insights into how well a group of that size worked and how they managed to coordinate and be productive. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I didn't answer your last question, Senator Hughes.
Oh, the staffing, yes.
Yes, yes. That is part of the answer, Senator Hughes, Chair Hughes, you mentioned this is a legislative task force, so we do have staff members. It would be the expectation that legislators who are serving on the task force would have some of their staff time dedicated to assisting in some of the administrative tasks associated with the task force. What we also have is currently support from the administration, so that is helpful. But also with the Alaska Food Policy Council providing several members on the task force, they are the recent recipients of a pretty large USDA grant where they are doing some additional data gathering and stakeholder engagement activities across the state that will work in parallel with this task force, and they have some resources to contribute to administering the work of this task force as well.
Okay, thank you. I think we do have a number of people that are online for public testimony, so I'd like to go to invited testimony, then we'll take public testimony, and then we'll come back to questions from members. So since the Maricultural Task Force just came up, I think the discussion will start with you, Heather McCarty. If you could please state your name, affiliation, and your location, and speak to your experience as former vice chair to that and how that might apply to what we're considering today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sound check.
We hear you fine. You're coming in loud and clear.
Thank you. I'm Heather McCarty. I have a fisheries consulting business in Juneau. I've been in fisheries for about 40 years, both in salmon and groundfish and crab fisheries, and in the state waters and federal waters. And as Representative Snyder said, I was the vice chair and then the chair for the last year of the Mariculture Task Force, which just sunsetted this last summer. I do think that this is a wonderful idea, and I have spoken with Representative Snyder and her staff about some of the things that the Mariculture Task Force did. And I can just briefly describe how that worked, if that's what you'd like to hear about, Madam Chair. We did have a small-ish number of members. There were, as you said earlier, 11. And then we had these working groups, committees, if you like, that were focused on specific aspects of development of mariculture. And each one of those working groups was chaired by a member of the task force. And that member had the responsibility of transmitting all of the work that happened in those working groups back to the full body. And we met separately. The working groups met separately from the actual task force. The task force met about once a month. It was public meetings. Towards the end of the life of the task force, we went from having two or three people from the public to having 40 people from the public as the interest in the work grew across the state. And then separate meetings were held of all these working groups, called by the chair and also made open to the public so that the public could participate. Each one of those working groups drew from the industry members that had specific areas of expertise in mariculture, ranging from research all the way up to marketing of mariculture products with everything in between. And at the end of what we had, almost 5 years, the life of the task force, it was a governor's task force, as you know, at the end of that period of time, we had an enormous body of information and recommendations that formed what you may have seen. It's the report to the governor. It was, I think, probably, my gosh, with appendices, it probably was pushing 60 pages. And much of that work, almost all of that work, was actually done in these working groups or committees that I described earlier. It was a really effective way to do it. We didn't have everybody in the same place at the same time. We kind of divided the work. And at the end of it, the task force members put all the work together into this report. It was an effective way of doing business. I'm happy to answer any specific questions that you may have.
I'm seeing none. Thank you so much, Heather. We appreciate your joining us today. And next, I will go to Amy Seitz, who I believe is online. Amy, she is also invited testimony. If you could please state your name, affiliation, and your location for the record and proceed with your presentation.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. And hopefully my microphone works because my camera doesn't seem to like to work with Teams. So hopefully you can hear me.
We can hear you, Amy. Welcome.
All right. Thank you. And thank you for hearing Hospital 298 today. For the record, my name is Amy Seitz. I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Farm Bureau, as well as the current Chair for the Alaska Food Policy Council. And both organizations know there is a need for a comprehensive strategy to build a resilient food system in Alaska. Alaska's food system has been reliant on outside forces for far too long. We've been relying on production, processing, and manufacturing of food in other states and other countries. We've been relying on a workforce in other areas, and we've been relying on long-distance shipping, and all the while hoping there aren't any major breakdowns in that system. This has made Alaska very vulnerable and missing out on the economic benefits of a robust food system. We have seen time and time again our food supply be disrupted, whether it's earthquakes, avalanches within the state, and grocery store shelves go bare. Until the pandemic, things resolved themselves, kind of quickly, and the food supply got back to normal. And by normal, I mean that Alaskans send nearly $2 billion out of state from purchasing imported foods. With the pandemic, the supply chain isn't returning back to normal very quickly. There continue to be issues that cause empty shelves at the stores. The price of food has been rising, and we'll continue to see this. It's time for a collaborative effort in shaping a strategy to build a robust food system in Alaska. And it needs to be collaborative with stakeholders from the various sectors of the food system working together. We can't build a food system if the different sectors work in silos. And if you can just picture, if the food system is a puzzle. And so if you just envision everyone there in the committee room trying to put together a puzzle, but you're all working, you each only have about 10 pieces. So you're all putting together your 10 pieces by yourself. Someone's working on the production, another person's working on developing markets, someone else has transportation. You might get your pieces put together, but there's never going to be a complete puzzle. And it won't come together till everyone brings your puzzle pieces to the table. The task force set up in Hospital 298 will bring those pieces together. Experts who are working in the different industries, the different sectors of the food system, will be there at the table sharing their expertise. And an important element that this task force brings is input from the state. We need the agencies and the legislators at the table for this discussion as well. Right now, as mentioned before, we're anticipating the start of the Governor's Food Security and Independence Task Force. And we're expecting some great information to come out of that and hoping for some great recommendations to come out of it. Hospital 298 and the Governor's Task Force fit together. The Food Security and Independence Task Force is going to start fairly quickly. It has a shorter time frame. We'll get some recommendations that hopefully we'll be able to start working on this fall over the winter. And then House Bill 298 has a longer timeline. It'll build off of the information from the Governor's Task Force and develop a strategy for building a resilient food system. Both task forces are important, and I hope committee members will support House Bill 298. Get it moved from committee quickly so we can start work on building a strategy. Again, I want to thank you for hearing Hospital 298 today and allowing me to speak, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Amy. I don't think you mentioned your location. You want to give your location, please?
I apologize, Madam Chair. I'm in Soldatna.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I'm not seeing any questions from members. Hang on the line because something may come up as we have time after the public testimony, if you're able. Next, we'll go to Tikhon Galbraith. I believe Yes, if you could please introduce yourself, your affiliation, and your location, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are you able to hear me?
We are.
Thank you, members of the committee, for allowing me to be here today. My name is Tikhon Galbraith. I'm from Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm a tribal member of Mtapsa Traditional Council. Today, I'm calling in from Anchorage, Alaska, on Dena'ina land. Today, I'm calling in representing Intertribal Agriculture Council as the Associate Director of IAC's Technical Assistant Network. The Intertribal Agriculture Council was founded in 1987 to pursue and promote the conservation, development, and use of our agricultural resources for the betterment of our people. We recognize that land-based agriculture resources are vital to the economic and social welfare of many Native American and Alaska Native tribes, and that the harmonies of man, soil, water, air, vegetation, and wildlife that collectively make up the American Indian agriculture community influence our emotional and spiritual well-being. The IAC over the last three decades has become recognized as the most respected voice within Indian community and government circles on agricultural policies and programs in Indian country. We are being shown by global events that now more than ever, we must critically evaluate the sustainability of our food systems. There is possibility for reform and opportunity to recreate and develop just and equitable systems that invest in human lives and all the relationships that we keep. Relationships to our community, to the land, to the animals, and with ourselves. At the foundation of these relationships, food is a catalyst for health. Intertribal Agriculture Council recognizes the interconnectedness of the challenge, and as a result, we, as a tribal nonprofit, invest our time and energy into a diverse array of services. It's important to reconcile with the fact that there is no going back, only forward. Fortunately, Alaska has a unique position. In many cases, infrastructure has yet to be built. And in doing so, we can imagine the future that we want to see, rather than limit ourselves to how to change what exists already. Through small-scale, community-focused efforts, in partnership with support from statewide advocacy, planning, and infrastructure development, we have the opportunity to develop a resilient and robust food system that not only feeds us, but also brings us closer together, builds economy, and reduces our contribution to the global carbon footprint. Part of IAC's work in the TA network is funded under the National Technical Assistant Network. I apologize. We have technical assistants specialized in each of the borough of Indian Affairs regions to support tribes and tribal producers and accomplish their goals related to food sovereignty. Within this work, we offer free technical assistance to meet harvesters, ranchers, farmers, wherever they are at, and work to remove barriers, identify solutions, and support their individual or community vision. What I'm starting to see, but want to see much more of, is Alaskan-made food and food products on the shelves in every home. Specialty products like herbal vinegars, hot sauces, teas, jams, and ice cream, commodities like salt and flour, produce like cabbage, carrots, lettuce, herbs, and potatoes, and proteins like caribou, moose, salmon, whale, seal, crab, oysters, clams, chicken, and pork. We should be eating meals of moose and caribou seasoned with Alaskan salt and garden herbs, paired with Alaskan potatoes and salad greens. We should be eating salmon over Alaskan barley with wild harvested morels and lingonberry sauce, or whale with beach asparagus and salmon berry chutney. When a meal is all Alaskan grown, we become connected to each other through the food we grow, harvest, catch, hunt, share, give, cook, and eat. If Alaska continues to invest the time and money needed to build the required relationships and infrastructure, what we will receive is money in the pockets of our neighbors, a stronger community, and a more resilient state economy. In Alaska, collectively, Alaska Native people are the largest private landholders in the state. In most cases, that land was selected by individuals, tribes, and Alaska Native corporations based on the traditional uses and availability of food resources. In my work, I've not had a single conversation with any individual or tribe who does not value the ability to continue practicing our traditional ways of life while also ensuring food security with their community. What does this look like? It's annual fish harvests from the rivers and oceans that provides for us. It's gallons and gallons of berries put up and preserved for the winter. It is caribou hunts, moose hunts, and whale hunts. It is community gardens and greenhouses. It is the revitalization of traditional use areas. It is the sharing of our resources and bounties to ensure no one goes hungry. By activating and empowering native holistic regenerative ways of producing food and agricultural products, we can inspire and inform a worldwide movement that will make a significant impact on climate mitigation for the benefit of all. So I ask you all this, if Alaskan food-related products, activities, and ways of life disappeared from our state, would you still want to live here? There were no blueberries to be found while walking through the sweet and spicy smell of tundra, or if your garden harvest didn't grow beyond belief under the long summer sun, or if your hands never again held the sparkling scales of salmon while you were thanking it for its life, would Alaska still feel like home to you? If the answer is no, then I encourage you to find a way in your own life to engage even more in Alaska's diverse and unique food system and to make it more resilient and inclusive. HB 298 is a meaningful step that we can all take to accomplish this goal. Thank you for the time today and the opportunity to testify.
And thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it. Now, I'm going to, just for sake of efficiency, because I see the public testimony has folks that are affiliated with things that are engaged, I think, in this. And so I think we'll be able to get some more information that might answer any questions. But also the invited testimony, I just want to make sure if any of the invited testimony cannot stay on through the public testimony and you need to take questions now, will you please indicate for us? Okay, none of you are indicating, so we're going to go ahead and open public testimony at this time. And I call on, please state your name, affiliation, location, and you have 2 minutes for your public testimony. We will start for the person who signed on first, and that is Robbie Mixon. Robbie Mixon, go ahead and begin.
Hi, my name is Robbie Mixon. I reside in Homer. I'm calling in from Kodiak today, where I'm working with an incredible group of Alaska Native farmers who are working to build greater food security through farming, hydroponics, and mariculture. I am the executive director of the Alaska Food Policy Council for the last 2.5 years, and I was a board member for 2 years prior to that, and I've run food hubs and farmers markets. I've had many hats in our food system over the past 12 years I've been here. So I wanted to come and tell you a little bit about the Food Policy Council. We have over 175 agencies and individuals representing federal and state agencies, tribes, universities, farmers, fishers, businesses, anything that has to do with the food system. You're welcome to be part of the Food Policy Council, and our goal is to create a healthier, more secure, and more self-reliant Alaska through a stronger, more equitable, sustainable food system. So while we are very small in staff, we have just one part-time employee, myself, we are mighty in our reach and our expertise. We have several statewide working groups, like the Food Waste Committee and the Indigenous Food Working Group, which Tikan, who you just heard from, chairs. And as Representative Snyder mentioned, we are currently working through a USDA Regional Food System Partnership Grant, which is aiming to connect localized food system organizations through a network of regional nodes. The past year and a half, we've undergone some community and region-based asset mapping to identify unique capacities for our food systems while looking at the barriers and system deficiencies. So we can look at, see how they're connected. So we've, this is a long way of saying we've been working on these issues for over 10 years now. We have quite a bit of resources, our networks, reports, all kinds of things that I think would be very vital to this task force. So we're very capable of providing support and structure should we have the honor of doing so. We've been preparing and training for this for a long time with our USDA project, along with research, committee activities, outreach, and convening capabilities. We can directly support and complement the work of the Alaska Food Strategy Task Force, along with the work that is being conducted by Governor Dunleavy's Food Security Task Force forming here in starting to meet here in the next couple of weeks.
Robbie, can you wrap up, please?
Yeah. So thanks for having me. We have lots of challenges ahead of us, and we truly hope that this proposed task force gets passed. And on behalf of the Food Policy Council, we are in full support of House Bill 298. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Claire Lubke, please state your name, affiliation, and your location, and begin your testimony.
Sure. Hello. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Claire Lubke. I'm the program director for St. Francis House Food Pantry, which is a program of Catholic Social Services located in Anchorage. And I just want to say I'm excited to be here today because I think that this is the most robust and holistic and strategic way to address food insecurity in Alaska. And I'm going to share a short message from our CEO, Robin Dempsey, about the work that we do and how it relates to the Food Strategy Task Force. So during fiscal year 2021, Catholic Social Services served over 12,000 people across Anchorage. I'll add that we served 1,800 people. Well, we had 1,800 visits to the food pantry last month alone. It's been very busy. By working closely with our clients, we understand how food insecurity in Alaska impacts their lives and know that the need for improved food systems is great. One of our programs, St. Francis House Food Pantry, of which I'm a part of, works on this challenge directly, providing food to an average of 1,180 families each month and distributing 690,000 pounds of food last year alone. We see firsthand the effects of food insecurity on our community. Over 10,000 people of the 12,000 people Catholic Social Services serves are coming directly to the food pantry. And we know that that's just a small portion of people across the state directly and negatively impacted by Alaska's food insecurity. I also really want to highlight a positive contribution we're making to Alaska's food system, and that's through our Refugee Assistance and Immigration Services Program, which is working to combat food insecurity in Anchorage. Through agricultural programming, we are working to strengthen local food systems, provide fresh and locally grown produce to underserved neighborhoods, and provide clients with the opportunity to become food entrepreneurs. We are seeing the positive impacts of this type of programming in our community at a very local scale. If initiatives like these were focused on statewide through HB 298, I believe the results would be overwhelmingly positive. Food systems are complex and require creative thought and targeted effort. The Food Security Task Force created by HB 298 will consider multiple facets of our food system while also giving communities across Alaska a critical voice at the table. This type of focused work will result in better outcomes for our local economy and for those in need. Food is key to permanent stability, which we're always striving to provide our clients at Catholic Social Services. When our families and communities are fed and nourished, our communities thrive. Thank you for hearing my testimony today. And thank you for letting me share from myself and from Catholic Social Services as a whole agency.
Thank you, Claire. We appreciate your joining us today. Next, we'll go to Phoebe Autry. Please state your name, affiliation, location, and you have 2 minutes for your testimony.
Hi. Members of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee. My name is Phoebe Autry, and I am the Interim Executive Director of the Alaska Farmland Trust, and I live and work in Palmer. The Alaska Farmland Trust is a nonprofit whose primary mission is the permanent protection of Alaska's valuable agricultural soils and the support and promotion of a thriving food system that will give Alaskans access to healthy local food and keep farmers farming. I'm speaking today to show our support of House Bill 298 and the creation of a food strategy task force. We believe this task force is essential in creating an inclusive and localized opportunity for stakeholders to collaborate on strategies and solutions to address food security for all Alaskans. Just as many of you, our organization sees the vulnerability of Alaska's food system on a daily basis. And the problems are multi-layered. As Alaskans, we are aware of what our grocery store shelves look like in the depths of winter. But as we still see the impact of COVID-19 global pandemic, we have a deep worry of what they will continue to look like and what that could mean for all Alaskans, especially the most underserved. We believe that a strong agricultural economy and a vibrant food system will not only improve our food security, but diversify our state economy in a sustainable way. Through the creation of the Food Strategy Task Force, we see a path forward and the best opportunity to move toward holistic approaches to increasing Alaskan food security. We need diverse and wide-reaching stakeholders to represent Alaska's incredible and complex food system at the table. We are in full support of House Bill 298, and we thank you for your time and listening to all of our testimonies today. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Phoebe. And next we'll go to Alan Budall. Please state your name, affiliation, location, and proceed with your testimony.
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can. Nice and clear.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Alan Budall. I'm the Executive Director of Lutheran Social Services of Alaska. I'm also the co-chair of Alaska VOAD, Volunteer Organizations Active in Disasters. And I wanted to take a moment to speak towards House Bill 298 on the possibility of a food strategy task force. You know, running a large food pantry here in Anchorage is these days is a very busy operation. We have seen a very large increase in the number of people coming for assistance, and the government is allowing us to do weekly visits, and we see many people coming four times a month. And we also have seen a very sharp increase in the number of seniors. Pre-pandemic, we had 152 on our CSFP, which we call senior box list. And today we're up to 495. So a very large number of people coming to the food pantry is our seniors. And also we operate a mobile food pantry every Tuesday in the parking lot of the Lutheran Church of Hope on West Northern Lights. And we have seen a sharp increase in the number of families and households that are visiting there. Yesterday we did 210 households, and normally pre-pandemic it was 100 to 120. So we see a need for this. And the other reason I'm very, very interested in one part of it is congregations have a lot of land, and we've gotten two congregations to do gardens for us. And last year they brought in 2.5 tons of produce, everything from rhubarb to potatoes. And it's absolutely wonderful that we can distribute fresh produce. This year I have a third congregation coming on. And I even have talked to my wife, who has planted many flower gardens, but she's never grown vegetables, to start some seeds inside this year and start growing vegetables in our home. So we need to encourage more of this, and I think that's what the Food Strategy Task Force can be. The other thing I want to talk about, and I know it is part of this task force too, but as I serve as the vice chair of the Alaska VOAD, and we are always concerned and need to see that we have a food supply that is ready for disasters. And we know that's part of what TFAP is, the Emergency Food Assistance Program, that we use and distribute here in our food pantries. But also, a transportation system, how do we get this to the areas where the disasters are being affected?
Mr. Budall, would you wrap up your comments, please?
So thank you for this opportunity and your consideration of House Bill 298. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Next is Ron Meehan. Please state your name, affiliation, location, and you have 2 minutes for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ron Meehan. I am the Policy and Advocacy Manager for the Food Bank of Alaska and the Alaska Food Coalition Manager. I'm calling in today from Anchorage to testify in favor of HB 298. The Alaska Food Coalition consists of more than 160 partners from every corner of Alaska representing food banks and food pantries, tribal councils, faith-based organizations, nonprofits, among others. We advocate for state and federal policies to reduce food insecurity, build healthy communities, and promote access to affordable, nutritious, and culturally appropriate food through the cultivation of a strong anti-hunger network. HB 298 will reinforce our efforts to ensure all Alaskans have enough nutritious food for a healthy life and will help us create a stronger and more sustainable food system. Alaskans face unique challenges to food production and maintaining access to nutritious foods due to our geographic isolation and the distance between our communities. And finding solutions to overcome these barriers will require research and collaboration among the different food sectors and from the different regions of our state. The task force created by HB 298 will allow for this necessary broad representation among the stakeholders of Alaska's food system, while also giving communities across Alaska a voice at the table. Focusing policy and implementation recommendations on sustainably growing the agricultural industry, improving efficiencies and outcomes in state-run programs, and ensuring food security in both rural and urban communities stands to substantially benefit all Alaskans. This legislation supports this while also strengthening markets for locally grown, harvested, and processed foods. Ultimately, the formation of a robust food security task force stands to greatly enhance Alaska's food system, and we're enthusiastic about the research and projects that HB 298 will provide. So thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Ron. We appreciate your being with us today. Next is Linda Benkin. Please introduce yourself, state your name, affiliation, location, and you have 2 minutes for your testimony.
Yeah, good afternoon. This is Linda Benkin. I'm Executive Director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, or ALFA, and I'm testifying today on ALFA's behalf in support of HB 298. I'm located in Sitka, Alaska. We do have members across the state. We recognize the importance of developing a comprehensive statewide strategy to strengthen Alaska's food systems, improve food security for all Alaskans, and encourage more food to be locally grown, harvested, and distributed. We also want to remind you that seafood is an important component of food security in Alaska. Over 50% of the seafood harvested in U.S. waters is harvested off Alaska, but currently less than 1% of that seafood stays in Alaska. In 2010, our organization launched the first community-supported fishery program in Alaska to increase the availability of local seafood to residents and build connections between the residents who value Alaska's sustainable seafood and the fishermen who are doing the work to catch it and keep those fisheries healthy. Our community-supported fisheries program, called Alaskans Own, provides high-quality seafood caught by our member fishermen, value-added processed in Alaska, and distributed across the strait through a forward-funded subscription program. With this network in place, ALFA was well-positioned to assist families in need when the pandemic hit and food shortages spread across the state. We started in March 2020 to meet identified need in Sitka, but quickly heard from Alaskans outside Sitka that seafood was urgently needed. With a host of project partners, we were able to provide over 630,000 seafood meals to families in need across the state and some in the lower 48 Pacific Northwest. We were honored to provide this seafood, and with funding from a USDA Regional Food System Planning Grant, we are now currently working to identify resources to continue distribution. We recognize the vulnerability of Alaska's food systems, the likelihood of future disruptions, and the imperative for Alaskans to support Alaskans in times of need and in times of plenty. More than ever, Alaska needs to invest in strengthening our local food systems, as well as creating more markets and economic opportunities for local food producers and businesses. From our perspective, HB 298 is an important step toward meeting those challenges and seizing the existing opportunities, and we urge your support of this bill and the task force that would create. Thanks so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. We appreciate your joining us. And last online is Jamie Morgan. Jamie, please state your name, affiliation, location, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Jamie Morgan. I'm the Government Relations Regional Lead for the American Heart Association, and I am calling in from Sacramento, California. We stand in strong support of this bill. We advocate for state and federal policies to reduce food insecurity, build healthy communities, and promote access to affordable and nutritious food. Research shows that food insecurity is associated with many chronic diseases, including high blood pressure, diabetes, and asthma. We believe HB 298 is consistent with our efforts to ensure all Alaskans have nutritious food for a healthy life, allowing communities to thrive. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. And with that, I'm not seeing anyone else online. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, I will close testimony. And now it's an opportunity if members have any questions or comments. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any questions, but just a comment, because I had a concern at first, too, when I saw so many entities. But the bottom line is when we think of food in simple terms, we think, at least I do, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But when we think of it more comprehensively, like this bill is outlining, I can understand why all these entities are involved, and I'm glad that it looks like you haven't missed anybody that should be involved, and I'm happy about that. So thank you for bringing this bill forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. I noticed that you have three kind of miscellaneous members allotted, and I actually think it's good, because I do think you've tried to cover the gamut, but there's one, because everything we do, when we're talking about a transformative systemic change to do the kind of what we know needs to happen to change the trajectory, it's going to take money. And so some of these recommendations may take financing of sorts. So I think those three miscellaneous members might allow for that, and whoever ends up being on this committee, if they review the record and the discussion at this table, I'm guessing that's going to come up anyway, but I just thought I'd put that on the record. The other thing that I just I noticed, and I'm trying to remember, I didn't know where it was, but you have a way that if somebody's not participating, they could be removed. Do you happen to know where that is located?
Madam Chair,
bottom of page 3, may remove a member of the task force if the member misses more than 2 meetings in the calendar year without being previously excused, or if the member does not contribute in a meaningful way to the activities of the task force. Vacancies shall be filled in the same manner as the original selection. So is this not the full meet that this would include for the sub work groups as well?
No, Madam Chair, that the original manner of identifying the 21 range of individuals, that is selected by the 9 executive board members, and it was our vision that if an individual was removed, then that executive board would find a replacement. We simply lifted language, borrowed language. I believe this also came from the Mariculture Task Force language, but if additional specificity was desirable, we would certainly be in support of that.
So you're only referring to the 21. You're not referring to the executive board itself or the 6 commissioners?
The way we had envisioned it, that's correct at this point, yes.
Okay, thank you. That's just good clarification. I also had one other question, and you know, sometimes you hear theories, and this may totally be a theory, But hearing Tikhon talk about, you know, the what we have in our amazing state, I've heard that when things are grown locally, it's fresher, so it's healthier. But also there's something about, as far as our health and medically, that if we're consuming things that are in our near vicinity, that that is healthy. And I don't know if there's science behind that or if that's just a theory. Are you aware, is there any evidence to that? Has there been research in that regard as far as to the health of a community?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I'm going to reach into the recesses of my academic brain and pull forth what I can recall, and I would relish the opportunity to send you more follow-up information. But there's a variety of ways that folks have studied this, and some of it has been done within our university system. I'm aware of studies on antioxidant content in wild harvest blueberries. They far surpass that in store-bought blueberries. We do have in the literature evidence of, you know, the longer produce is around, that you do start to have some degradation of nutrients. I do not know if this was also part of a scientific study, but I do know, I believe it was our Division of Ag several years ago that held a taste test on Alaska-grown carrots as compared to store-bought carrots, and they were much sweeter. The science behind that is that we have cooler nights and it converts more sugars into the carrot. So it is a better taste, a more competitive product. There is a body of literature that looks on at the cultural appropriateness of foods and mental health and social well-being. That is fairly well documented, as well as the availability of familiar healthy foods in hospital environments can aid in faster recuperation. And that's just a smattering. But yes, we do have, across a variety of positive health outcomes, we can point to how important local food is. And oh, I'll add in too, I do believe we have a body of evidence suggesting that you can reduce allergies possibly by consuming foods that are grown in the given area, because it's all part of the surrounding environment and you're exposed to that, and your body is prepared for that. But I would love to compile that if that was something you'd like to learn more about, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you very much. I'm just curious about that. It seems like it's common sense, and I just, when it's a gut feeling, it's always nice to know there's science behind it. Just a couple other things, and I'm going to mention to the committee that we are going to do the committee substitute route for this, so we can get it kicked out next week. And so if you could get any amendments to us by the close of business on Monday, May 2nd, that'd be great. And I'll just point out a couple of things. We have on page 5, we've got two deadlines for getting reports on, and we're doing 3 of the focus areas for each, but now we have 7, so that's something we're going to fix. Another thing I might mention on the bottom of page 5, we're creating this to begin on December 1st, but because it's a legislative task force and because there's an election, and because the presiding officers aren't official until we gavel in, that is, if an organization has been determined, we're probably going to have to fix that kind of thing, probably give those presiding officers a little bit of time to get those appointees up and moving. And before we close out, and I'll give you all a chance for any comments or questions, the other thing is more than half of the legislatures between the House and Senate are now serving on the Legislative Food and Farm Caucus. And it has been quite a bit of a volume of things that we've been considering and focusing on recommendations. And there is some thought that if we're going to do this in a way where we're really going to make some progress and not just be lip service to this topic, at some point, we might need to think about special committees, a special committee in the House, a special committee in the Senate. So I'll just put that on the record. But I believe the governor's task force and then this task force would be a wonderful resource if we decided to have those kind of special committees. So that also might at some point tie into this. Of course, that's something that each body would have to determine. whether they would want to do that next legislative session, because there's an election between then and now. We're not sure who all will be serving, so I'm hoping, whether those of us in this room are here or not, if we can urge the bodies next year to consider that, to pair up with this, because it's a huge task, and it's not something that's going to happen overnight. It's going to take a lot of systems working together. So appreciate that. Are there any comments from other members? Okay, seeing no further discussion at this time, we'll set House Bill 298 aside. Again, any amendments to be incorporated into a committee substitute, please get them to our office at Daniel Phelps by close business Monday, May 2nd. And with no other business come before our committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 4:35.